and welcome to Parenting Help with Vigeo Behavior Consulting. Join us for conversations with experts in the fields of cognitive behavior, mental health, behavior analysis, education, and child psychology. On this podcast, we examine the challenges that parents are facing and share insights and strategies that have helped other parents with similar issues. I'm your host, Katie Palmer. I'm a parenting coach and board-certified behavior analyst. I'm also the owner of Vigeo Behavior Consulting. I am fortunate to be able to engage in conversations with some incredible professionals whose depth and breadth of experience can offer guidance for parents who are looking for new ideas. I hope you find this podcast useful, engaging, and insightful. I am so excited today to have with us Dr. Emma Waddington, who is a clinical psychologist in Singapore. Emma, could you tell us a little bit about your extraordinary background?
Oh, lovely. I'm so delighted to be here too. So I'm a British trained clinical psychologist. I live in Singapore with my three children, husband, two dogs, and numerous chickens. I run a private practice and what else can I say that's useful? I love what I do.
You're an author, yes.
Oh, yes, true. Yeah. Yes, I am an author. With Chris McCurry, we've written a series of books. So we're currently writing another series of books on children, a workbook for anxiety, and then one for sadness and one for anger. And I have a podcast as well called Life's Dirty Little Secrets, which I also do with the lovely Chris McCurry.
Yes. And this duo, this dynamic duo of Dr. Chris McCurry and Dr. Emma Waddington have recently also graced the Vigeo Online Academy with ACT for Parents training. So any providers who are listening who are interested in understanding the benefits of using ACT for Parents, head on over there. We'll put all the links and information to your books, as well as your podcast, as well as the Online Academy. We'll put that all up on my website. So,
sweet. That was fun. Lots of fun.
So I want to talk today about boundary setting, because many of our guests have done a lot to help us understand what anxiety is, and how to take a compassionate perspective on the challenging behavior that often happens in the presence of anxiety. And we've been offered a lot of tools for emotional regulation of ourselves as parents and as providers, as well as our children or our clients. Today, we'd like to add to our toolboxes and talk about setting boundaries with children who are struggling to regulate their emotions and their behavior and their big, beautiful feelings. So first, I guess right out of the gate, what do we mean when we say boundary setting, or what do we mean when we say boundaries?
Gosh, that's a really good question. So I think for me, I mean, it's so broad, right? Boundary setting can be anything. Apologies. It's like setting a limit on a behavior. If you want, or even boundary setting can be asking your child to stop what they're doing and do something else. It can be a boundary setting around what time they need to be back. It can be, you know, it's basically setting a limit on a behavior. It's saying, asking your child to do or stop something that feels, you know, important for you, for them to stop it. And I think the complexity is that sometimes we need to think about, sometimes we get caught up in why am I setting this boundary, and trying to reason and think about whether this is a really important boundary, how important is it, especially if we know they're going to get upset. And so boundaries, I think, need to be put in the context of thinking about the kind of parent you want to be, but really the kind of guidance you want to give your child. What is really important for you to do for your child, knowing who he is or knowing who she is, knowing the pieces that she needs to develop in order to be this full child, the version that you know, they are going to be and can be. Mm-hmm. What are the parts that you need to support them in getting them there? And that requires boundary setting. That is a teaching, really. For me, boundary setting is a part of our job to discipline, which comes from the word to teach, really. Yeah, it's really to support that scaffolding that they need. And in their journey to becoming the child, the adult, the person that they should truly become, they'll need to learn. And we can be their guides, their coaches, their support in learning. But that requires boundary setting, limit setting, guidance, support, nurturing. But the real understanding that some of their behaviors are unhelpful in their journey towards becoming the person that they're meant to be. So yeah. For me, boundary setting is in that context always.
And there's this sense that I'm hearing about a path of growth and a parent guiding, like, yes, you're ready for that step and maybe not quite ready for that step. Is that there's somehow in my mind, I was suddenly visualized a timeline or a growth developmental timeline. And when you said guidance and teaching toward who they're meant to be, or who they can be, how do we know? Going back to what you said about questioning ourselves, how do we know when to say, that's where you're not ready for that? Or yes, I think you are, but here's a couple guidelines.
It's a really great question. And I think we can't always know. And that's why sometimes we make mistakes.
Yes.
And we learn, right? And we evolve. Part of it is really seeing how much you can, in a way, how much you trust your child and you know that they can or can't do it, right? Right. So, for example, I have two boys and a daughter, but my eldest is 13 and my youngest boy is 10. Now, my eldest has more difficulties with organization and timekeeping than my 10-year-old. So I need to help my 13-year-old and support him with some boundary settings and expectations around that, which I don't need to do with my 10-year-old.
Right. So, the age is flip-flopped a little bit, you might expect, yeah.
No, yeah, absolutely. Whilst I have to set different kind of boundaries with my 10-year-old than I have to set with my... So, for example, my 10-year-old can get very, very distressed about things. When things don't go exactly as he expects them, he gets very upset. And I have to then set some boundaries on, you know, how long he's upset for. Because he needs that help. He needs that help from me to regulate. You know, some might say, oh, you need to sort of validate and give him time and he'll get there. But he doesn't get there. Mm. He doesn't get there. He needs the boundaries to limit him, to support him. And that's the scaffolding he needs. Whilst my eldest self-regulates quite well. And so I can validate him when he's upset. And yes, he'll, you know, continue to be upset, but eventually he'll be able to move on. Whilst my youngest boy struggles to move on. I have to help him move on. I have to say, right, okay, we've talked about this. You know the answer. Let's move on to the next activity. And that can be quite directive.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. How did you recognize that he needed those limits? So I'm imagining your first experience with your first child was about, you know, he learned how to self-regulate and probably had some guidance from you in that process. And then your second son, suddenly he needed a completely different approach. How did, I'm picturing the discovery of that as really a difficult journey. Is that something you would be willing to share?
Yeah, it was a very difficult journey, especially with my sort of story about how I'm a clinical psychologist and my background is with children and families and how I should know what I'm doing. and also my attachment, if I'm honest, I still am very attached to parenting in a very validating way.
Right. Yeah.
And so that got in the way of my effectiveness with him, and it still does sometimes. So I had to sort of, and that's what I find so interesting, is that the stories that we tell ourselves about how we should parent or how we should do X can get in the way of our effectiveness. And so my desire to be a certain parent got in the way of the kind of parent he needed.
Ooh,
that, and he needs.
Yeah, and continues to need. And so giving him what he needs goes against part of your value set in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, except that, you know, when I really sort of unraveled it, it was more of a rule than a value.
Yeah. We like talked about value. That with Dr. Allison Stapleton. We talked about, like, when rules aren't working, can we notice that?
Yeah. Sometimes it takes a long time. It certainly took me a long time to realize that trying to hold my son's emotions, help him put words to his emotions, what was working for my eldest actually was dysregulating him more.
So the validation piece of, I see you're angry and I understand what that's like, actually sent him deeper into dysregulation. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. So in essence, yeah. In essence, when I was saying to him, wow, you are so angry, he'd be like, yeah, I'm so angry. You're bad and you've done this to me. And, you know, he'd just get into this blaming or, you know, just more overwhelm generally. And so what he needs is for me to go, you're upset about this. This didn't work out the way you wanted. Just quite factual.
Mm.
This is, you know, you're really disappointed and you wish it wasn't like this. Now, what are we going to do about this?
Mm.
So you have two choices. You can stay here and stay upset about it, or we can move on and do the other thing that you wanted. Do you need time to think about this? Do you need time to calm down?
Yeah.
What do you need? And so I have to kind of, it's super structured. That's the boundaries he needs. He needs that. And he has a, you know, he has a choice to stay and get upset, but I then move on and do something else. Because so what was happening
doesn't impact all the people around him.
Exactly. And in a way, I've learned that if I stay with him when he's upset, I just get him more upset. Like, I'm not helping. But initially it was, let me help you. This is so bad. What's so bad about it? You were hoping, you know, trying to put language to it, because that's the piece that I thought he needs scaffolding with. But yes. The dominant piece he needs scaffolding with is actually to downregulate and move on.
Yes.
That's the piece he's stuck with. He gets very stuck and can't move on. So I kind of have to put a time around that and help him switch onto something else.
Yeah. I hear also in what you described, I think I hear, let me know if I'm on the right track, a boundary that you set, that he gets to be upset if that's the choice. Mm-hmm. He wants to sort of stay in this space and be upset for a little bit longer. And he's not allowed to intrude upon other people's moment to moment, you know, maybe somebody else in the house is perfectly peaceful and content and doing something. Like him making the choice to be upset and sit there for a little bit cannot change the environment for other people. Is that I don't know if I said it in a nice way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, yeah. And he appreciates that.
Mm.
It's like, because he needs the space sometimes to calm down. He usually needs an activity to calm down. So he needs something to distract him. Mm. Sometimes he needs to eat to calm down. Sometimes he needs to, you know, go into, he's got a corner to calm down. He usually has to do something. But if he stays in the same place, he gets more and more distressed. And if I'm there, it gets worse.
Yeah.
So that's why I remove myself. But I also set a limit that he can't, because what tends to happen is that he'll then, you know, escalate with somebody else.
Right. Yeah. And that's the piece of that's not allowed.
Yeah. You stay here and you can calm yourself down, or you go to your space and you can calm yourself down. You know, I'm here to help you. So it's not a, like a, you know, you're a bad kid. I'm here to help you if you need it, but I don't, you know, want you to shout at me or call me names or anything. I'm not going to listen to that.
Yes. I'm here to support you. And yes, here are the boundaries around
exactly how
I am treated as, you know, as your parent or as another person, just as another person.
That's right. That's right. And I think that's really important. He needs that guidance. That's what he needs. And I mean, the reality is that, gosh, even sort of adults, when, you know, when we're dysregulated, we can do things that we will regret.
Yeah.
And so kids are the same. So setting the limits and helping them not to do something that makes matters worse is super important.
Right. I'm reminded of my youngest when he was, I think he was about 10 and slightly younger. And we had a phrase of like, you're absolutely allowed to throw a fit right now. It just can't be right here. Go to your room. But we had a sort of a communal space in our downstairs, so he couldn't really get away from that if he was down in that space. That was the living space for everyone. And I do know that setting those boundaries, he has actually shared with me later, like that was helpful. So I set the boundaries about where and without judgment. Yes, I totally see you're mad about this, and you can take that over there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I think it's when you're ready.
Yeah, exactly. I'm here when you're ready. Exactly. And I just think, you know, fast forward, right? And I'm always thinking about what would happen if they did this with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And how me not teaching them in this very safe environment how to handle feelings or how to be told no, or how to be asked to be a part of the family or to contribute to the family, how being asked to do these things and how their behavior sort of manifests, what the impact is going to be on their social environment. And so I always think of that, like, if I've got to teach them, because I want them to be incredibly successful in their relationships. I want them to have the relationships and know how to set boundaries themselves, and know how to say no to people when they're not happy with them, and know what it feels like when people say no to you. And so I'm always thinking about, you know, our life at home is where they get to learn all these things to then be able to use them later. They
learn don't learn and fall down and make a mess. And
that's right. And the tragedy would be if they don't, then what happens?
Yeah. So what guidance do you give to parents who hear what you're saying and maybe even can visualize it and say, that sounds really, really wonderful. And they're resisting because they have already experienced what it's like to have a child, maybe their particular son or daughter or child, just in an absolute meltdown. And they don't want to go there. They don't want that to be, they don't want to be in that. And so how do we help them shape boundary setting or set boundaries and tolerate how awful it feels when your child is yelling at you, calling you horrible names, doing the blame, and tearing things apart, pursuing. I've had clients whose child will pursue them or take it out on a sibling or a pet. So I'm
difficult.
Sorry, I just went on and on there, but what kind of guidance can you offer?
Well, I think the first step is to recognize how hard that is.
Yeah.
It's to recognize with the parent, you know, what thoughts and feelings show up for you, what do you get entangled with? Because we all do. And help them to see that and understand. Perhaps sometimes I do work, you know, to understand where it comes from. Where did you learn these rules? You know, what are you fighting? Because some of the parents in my experience who struggle with boundary setting had too many boundaries set.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as children themselves. And so they don't want to do what their parents did. So they almost live by a rule that I won't be my parents, but it gets overgeneralized.
Yes. Can you explain a little bit what you mean by overgeneralized? Because that just, it clicks for me, but I'm not sure if everyone listening will know what that means.
So problem with having a rule is that just because of the way language works with our human brains is that we start to use it even when it doesn't work.
Mm.
We start to use it even in situations where sometimes it really, really doesn't work.
Yeah.
So if you have a rule, boundaries are cruel.
Yes.
Then even when, you know, your kid, I had a parent who said that, you know, their kid was running off into the road. And understandably, they got very upset. But that kind of situation is where really that boundary is super important.
Yeah.
But if we get very entangled with these rules, then we can miss the fact that it doesn't work.
Yes, paying attention to that outcome.
Yeah, totally. Even when it doesn't feel right. Just because it doesn't feel right doesn't mean it's wrong.
Oh, yep. I'm writing that down.
Yeah, because that's a big one, right? In ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy, which is the sort of model that I use, Steve Hayes once said, you know, oh, I can't remember the quote. Chris is so much better than me with quotes, but something to the effect of, you know, our job is not to feel better. It's to get better at feeling.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the feelings we have dominate our actions when they shouldn't. So if something doesn't feel good, we don't do it. Sometimes it's good to do it, even when it doesn't feel good. Like, if you know, good, I mean, important, relevant, values-based.
Values-driven, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of parenting doesn't feel good. A lot of it is hard. It just is hard.
It's hard.
Mm.
And there's, it's hard. You know, I don't know how many times I've said it on this podcast and with clients and with friends.
Mm.
Nobody gives you the manual.
And no.
If I had written one, well, first of all, if I had written one for my first child, I would have tried to, and I did, I tried to use it for my second, and I just had to throw,
exactly.
throw most of it out.
Totally.
And if
so
I wrote
hard,
one for the second and handed it to somebody else, it wouldn't be their child's manual, a parenting manual, you know, like, and so paying attention to those, is this working right now? Is all the time. Oh my God, it's exhausting.
It's exhausting. And I also think that what's super important is to recognize, and I don't think we pay enough attention to that, is like thinking really deeply the kind of parent you want to be. Like, what do you want for your kid? What do you really want for your kid? And that is so different that that's why we can't have a parenting book. Mm. Because what I want for my kid, when I look at my kid, will be very different from what the next person wants. And so the boundaries that I want, so I know that what I want for my kids, for example, is I want them to be able to express their feelings and assert their needs effectively.
Mm.
You know, that's really important to me. So I'm actually quite willing to tolerate big feelings.
Yes.
But that's me. That's me. My partner's not willing to tolerate big feelings. He's, you know, for him, what's really important to him is, actually, regulation is really important.
Yeah.
Managing feelings, being sort of more in control of the way you say things, being able to know your feelings but contain them. Well, so I don't think that's important to a degree, right? We're not going to go around. But I actually love expressing feelings with emotion.
Yes.
I think that's super important. So, and I can't get rid of his value around that, although I have tried, let's be honest. I have tried. Like, I have to respect that for him, you know, being respectful of authority is really important. It isn't for me, but he thinks that's a great skill. Manners, you know, like you're eating with the queen every day, is really important to him. It's part of the respect. Again, not that important to me.
Yeah.
So how can we write a parenting book?
Right. Yes. Yes.
Just impossible. I think it's more about being truly, really, really honest. Like when I went in and thought, actually, why am I struggling with my partner about, you know, differences about manners? Like I was getting really annoyed at him because he would tell them how to eat at the table. For me, you know, harmony and laughing and having fun is more important than manners. For him, manners is super important because he thinks of them fast forward, you know, 10 years from now, eating like pigs, like you think they do. And whilst I'm thinking of these big congregations and laughter and sharing and all, and that's me. And so here are these very different pictures that he and I have.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, for me, I have really strong boundaries around time together. Like I will not sacrifice time as a family. Like that's really important. So I have to set limits with my child on how often he sees his friends, how much he's, you know, online talking to them. Now that's my little battle with him.
Yeah.
Like I will, you know, we're having dinner, you're coming down. We're having breakfast, you're coming down. And that's not my husband's battle. You know, they're all into chess, online chess, and they all play online chess. It drives me crazy because I think it's getting in the way of our family life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But they connect over that. So for him, it's great. So I guess just around, you know, a long way to say that as parents, we need to think about what's really important because that makes it easier for us to sit with those big feelings.
Yes. And to notice when what's important shifts. As you sort of alluded to, and actually someone that I was speaking to yesterday noticed that they were getting really bothered by something that their partner was fairly demanding about. So there was a similar conflict and they paused for a moment. So, well, wait, why does that bother me? And they, I think in that moment, I happened to be there to witness and they were like, they said, I don't need to pursue that one. And
yeah, it's almost, that's a rule.
It's a rule. Yeah. And then there are shifts that we go through where, I think about teenagers, there are certain things that I definitely did not anchor on as a parent as much when my children were teenagers, swearing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And you know, I still had boundaries about it. You cannot swear at me.
Yeah,
I'm the presence about things.
Yeah,
I had to look at my own behavior. I do that too. So
that's right.
What was the difference when they were little? When they were bigger? I think we had conversations about that. My boys and I. There was something that you said that reminded me of one of my parenting clients, and I wanted to know how you were able to build those boundaries of, no, it's time for dinner. The devices go off, the computers go off. Mm. You're not online right now. We are coming together as a family for dinner, or we are doing something together. What do we do when they just get mean?
Yeah, and they do. In fact, I had a mean 13-year-old in the car this morning. So what we do, well, what I do, because other people may want to do different things, is I tend to set a boundary that I, you know, I don't like being spoken to like that. So I'm going to leave. I'm happy to talk about it, but only once you stopped using that kind of language with me. That tends to be the behavior that I choose.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that if I stay and escalate and tell him you will not be speaking to me like that, he would just get more and more angry. So something to the effect of, you're angry and you're using language that I don't like, so I'm going to leave and we can talk about it once you, you know, stop using that language. It's kind of an invitation to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's my choice.
How long does it take, do you think, sometimes for, and I can imagine many, many weeks of that scenario playing
consistent
over and over again until the value of avoiding the dinner or continuing access to whatever online item that they might have been having, the value of that is lessened as consistent just expression of boundaries happens. And I'm not sure, like, that's where my behavior analytic mind goes. How does a parent tolerate that for 2-3 weeks?
You know, one of the biggest things for parenting that I've found is that because it's a 24-hour job, we need to see behaviors in a 24-hour lens. So for me, as an example, is what tends to happen, especially with teenagers, and perhaps, you know, some people talk to me about toddlers, we stop liking them. And that's just a fact. And I know that's a dirty little secret, and we're trying to find somebody who'll be willing to talk about it on our podcast.
Well,
because, oh, awesome. Well, it's thank so you for real. Volunteering.
It's so important.
It's so real. And it's so a secret. Important. And I don't understand. I don't know. I mean, yeah. Anyway, most people don't like talking about that. But the reason why it becomes so aversive is because we feel so awful at setting these boundaries, right? So it becomes, we're contacting that feeling of awfulness, bad parent, as soon as we see our child. And if we are only relating to our kid in those moments, then we're going to be fighting more and more. And then we tend to avoid them. So for me, it's about falling in love with your kid again. All those other moments, right, of the day where they're not doing that thing. Finding different ways that you want to spend time with them. What is it that you want to do? It's like almost parents don't have permission to choose what you do with the kid. It's got to be child-directed always.
Oh.
Now, you know, I was never a Lego player. I love pretend. Like, my daughter and I are having an awesome time. She's bringing up all my sort of, I love pretend. Like, we'll play, I can play dolls and, you know, kitchens and shops till the cows come home. We have so much fun together. And my eldest loved that as well. But my middle one didn't. And it was really hard. He loves Monopoly. I don't like it. He loves chess. I don't like it. He loves crashing. I don't like it. He loves Nerf War. I don't like it. So it's really hard. Because I didn't like any of what he was playing. And I would feel terrible. Like, I'd forced myself in this very inauthentic way to play these games. And he totally got it that I was inauthentic.
Yeah. Yeah, he knew.
And he knew. There's no fooling. In fact, he still knows. He goes, "Mommy, I know you're not listening." I'm like, "How?" And he goes, "You do that thing you do when you're not listening." So stop pretending. Let's not pretend with our kids, because they know we're pretending. So let's just be ourselves. So I had to figure out how to enjoy time with each of my kids in their own way and move on. Be the one that moves on and moves on to the next thing and teach them how to move on. So boundary setting becomes easier when we know we have a relationship with our kids. They're more likely to listen to our boundaries when they know that we're fun to be with sometimes, that they want to hang out with us sometimes. So I think it's almost like we can't do one thing without the other.
Yes.
We
and
really
building
can't.
A relationship doesn't mean becoming their best friend.
No.
Building a relationship doesn't mean we let them have access all the time to all the things that they want to do, engage with, so that they like us. Like
because it's more about liking us than anything else. But an example, for example, for this morning is a great example. So my son, my boys are really into this. It's so unfair. You love Mia so much more than you love us. And I keep joking, do you want me to treat you like I treat her? She's sick.
Mm-hmm.
I can do, you know, if you want, you know, you don't get a phone, you don't get to travel on your own, you don't get out to, you know, we can just do everything the same. And usually, you know, that sort of irreverence cuts that behavior. But this morning we had it again, because she was delaying everyone because she wanted different foods. And so my son said, see, she always gets what she needs. She always gets what she wants. And I said, what is it that you didn't get this morning? Are you saying that you didn't get something you wanted? Is that what this is about? There's something you wanted. And so he got really annoyed at me and saying, I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to argue. And I said, sure. Okay, let's not argue. So off we go in the car and he sort of hump, hump, hump. And I said, hey, how about you choose some music? And so he chose some music and then we snuggled and we laughed and off we went. We didn't resolve. We didn't repair.
We didn't process.
We didn't answer. But it's that ability to go, you can argue, you can be unhappy with each other, and we can have fun and listen to some great music, and you can go off and have a great day.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't agree about this piece.
Yeah.
You know, all of it. And that's the reality. I think that's the Jedi skills of parents. I think I talk about Jedi skills a lot. Our Jedi skills are our ability to switch the pivot into the next moment, the next thing, and not stay.
What if as a parent, we know that we have a hard time pivoting?
Oh, we all have a hard time pivoting. So I think for me, my experience is we have a hard time pivoting because of what it's bringing up for us.
The pivot? You know, kind of, or the thing we're pivoting away from or to, or maybe that's the same.
Well, I think often we don't move because we need to feel better. Like this morning, right? My son was accusing me of favoritism for my daughter, that I never did anything for him. Can't remember what else he told me. Whole sort of string of things of what an awful parent I was. And, you know, I just ignored it. Now, I could have gone and felt, you know, oh my goodness, maybe it's true. Maybe I am, you know, favorite. Oh, poor thing. I'm just being really mean. What is it that he needs from me? I could have pivoted into my whole narrative.
Right.
And stayed there and therefore tried to fix it with him to feel better as a good parent. I need him to see me as a good parent. But instead, I pivoted into, wow, I don't get a lot of time with him anymore. And I'm getting less and less every day. What do I want to do with this time? I want to have a bit of a laugh. And I want him to know that relationships doesn't all need to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And we can have difficult conversations and still be okay. Like fundamentally, our relationship is fine, even when these big feelings show up, even when, you know, upsetting things happen.
Yeah. And we may
disagree. That's a big lesson.
Yeah,
we may never solve that. This may be like, you know, in the Gottmans, I do a lot of couples therapy. The Gottmans talk about this perpetual issues. Definitely think this is a perpetual issue with him.
Yeah.
Like, what his view of fairness.
Right.
Is. And we don't have to make it right. We just don't have disagree. To make it right.
And one other thing I'm hearing, there's a little bit of permission that I'm interpreting from what you're saying to let go of this idea that somewhere later in his life he'll be sitting in a therapy session and discover that the thing his mother did that was so awful was to treat him unfairly. Like
Yeah, and totally have to let go.
And we have
that.
Permission to, we're not going to fix everything in every single moment, so that we're to prevent issues that may not really arise.
Oh, I'm totally putting money into a therapy fund. I'm just assuming that's going to happen. It's not an if, it's a definite.
We
child
hope.
Of a therapist.
Yes.
I think it's a,
we hope.
But I think absolutely. And I think ultimately I haven't, you know, got control over really, I can just try.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many factors that influence an individual, and to think that our parenting has so much control over the outcomes is so grandiose, ultimately.
Oh my goodness. I love that. Yeah.
I think it's just not that powerful. And I think that's terrifying to a lot of parents.
Yeah.
I think it's scary to think that we don't have that much power.
Yes, because if we don't have that much power, how do we know our kids are going to be okay?
Exactly. Exactly.
If we keep this stranglehold on the control and the power mm-hmm. over our kids' growth, because we mm-hmm. think we know how to make it so they'll be okay.
Yeah.
We strangle too much.
That's right. And that's mostly what I see is very anxious parenting.
Yeah.
That fear that, how do I know? You know, what they call the helicopter parenting, but even the kind of the other, well, there isn't another extreme really, but I think the very compassionate, free roaming parenting. But when you actually go granular, they're all setting limits, but in different ways. I mean, I don't know, maybe there is literature out there telling people not to set limits, but even the gentle parenting where, you know, lots of compassion, and ultimately it's about creating the freedom, I think, for kids to feel permission to feel what they feel so that they don't end up in therapy and they, you know, feel validated and have the safe, secure base to start the rest of their life. So I think the fear that we can't control the outcome drives a lot of our behaviors.
Yep.
And I find it quite liberating to know that I don't have that much power.
Yeah.
I think the opposite is, for me, it's the opposite. I'm just going to have fun as much as I can.
Yeah.
And just make sure that they don't ruin too much of my fun. That's enough limit. You know, that it's doable. And even like my children, we have bedtime routines, and I think I talked about it on one of my podcasts. One evening I was like, I can't do this, guys. I'm just gonna lie on the couch and watch TV. You're gonna sort yourselves out. And they all looked at me and went, what's wrong with you? And I said, you know what? I'm just too tired. So you're going to put yourself to bed.
Yeah.
Like, what? That doesn't happen in this household. You sing us a song and you read us a book and you massage our feet and all the insane things that I've been shaped to do over the course of the last 13 years. And I said, well, tonight I'm not. Tonight I'm just watching TV. And I remember my husband was traveling and it took them hours to fall asleep. But I just watch TV. Just lay there and watch TV. And I felt moments of, oh my goodness, tomorrow's going to be a nightmare because they're going to bed so late. And then I thought, no, I'm just going to let it be, because today I need to check out. I just don't have it. And I knew that if I did, I'd be angry and grumpy.
And resentful.
I was exhausted and resentful. And I was having, you know, the difficult time in my life. And eventually it happened, but they came up and down the stairs. They were like, what's wrong with you, mama? But you're breaking. What? No, back to bed.
And you didn't need to fix it for them.
No.
They struggled through the confusion and the worry and the discomfort. and the
and the anger. Eventually it became irritation and upset and how can you and da 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 da. And eventually they fell asleep because they were exhausted. But it was brilliant. I had a great time.
Yeah.
And I you did what I needed.
You needed.
I really did. I yeah. really did. I really did. So I think, yeah, it's so important.
You said a minute ago of knowing ourselves well enough to know that if I force myself into this activity that they're expecting, I will be nasty. You didn't say nasty.
That's right.
That's where I would have gone. Yeah. I would have been angry and resentful and snippy, and I would have cut story short, and I would probably not have sent very good energy into a foot massage. You know, it probably would have been sending.
Yeah.
I am so respectful of that and inspired by it. And again, I'm thinking of so many people that I've worked with, and I want to give them that kind of permission.
Yeah, it's bold.
It is very bold, and it's also, you also have to have the capacity to tolerate.
Yes, that's the hard part.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. And so where we started with this piece is that recognizing that you're doing it more for you than you are for them, and that that's okay.
And that that's okay.
And that that's okay. Actually really good for them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and ultimately it you know, this is a relationship. It's not just about them. It's also about you. And, you know, teaching them to treat you nicely is really important. You deserve to be treated nicely. Not all the time, obviously. You don't get away with that. But, you know, it's important that they know what is important to you too.
Yeah.
Because they'll need to know that. I always think about them and their future relationships and, you know, how, you know, I want them to be in relationships so that their relationships are meaningful and connecting, and, you know, mm-hmm. they can assert themselves effectively with me, mm-hmm. and I can assert myself effectively with them.
Yeah.
That they're okay. And if sometimes it means that I do something that they really don't like not giving them a foot massage at night, or, you know, not reading. And I'm actually absolutely happy to do that. My husband is absolutely never massages. This is ridiculous. I'm not giving a massage. I do because I quite like it.
Yeah.
I like it, but not every day. Not even, you know, maybe once a week at most. And I do it for as long as I want to do it, not as long as they want me to do it. So that's how I find my sweet spot with some of these things.
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't want to do it. And I go, no, I'm not doing it. I'm going downstairs. You know, horrified faces, aghast.
I like this balance I'm hearing too about, it is, I think, a form of teaching them the flexibility between one bedtime routine and another, mm-hmm. between parents, mm-hmm. so that they can fall asleep in a slightly mm-hmm. different environment, with a slightly different routine, with learning how to self-soothe, I think is one way to put it. But also, yeah. How do I fall asleep as an individual?
Yeah, absolutely.
I remember,
and it's complicated,
next to my children.
Yeah.
And realize, like, I should have just gone down to the couch.
Yeah, because you're exhausted. So many people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also recognizing, take responsibility for your actions. Mm-hmm. So I think about that a lot. Like, I'm super mindful of what I'm reinforcing.
Yes.
And I give myself permission to do that. Like, I know people who get really stuck with, oh no, the sleep routine needs to be super rigid because otherwise, da 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 da. And I think that's not kind to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's not workable.
It's just simply not workable.
Yeah. And so well, sleep is an interesting one because it changed so much over the course of my three children. But actually, all my children, I've sort of laid and cuddled them until they've fallen asleep with all of them, despite all my sort of rigid rules before having children. I did the exact opposite because I loved it.
Yes.
I loved it. And none of them have had issues with falling asleep. All of them have managed to, that's been faded and that's been fine. So it's also this sort of fear that we need to do it. It's like that fear of what will happen. Of course, that doesn't mean that it always happens the way you want it to, but that actually perhaps having the confidence that if I need to address the behavior at a certain time, I will. Mm-hmm. You know, right now I love sleeping next to my daughter because I think she's my last one and I won't have her for very much longer. She'll become like, you know, Leo. Although Leo wouldn't mind if I slept next to him too, actually, now that I think about it. It's just the middle one who's not so keen. But, you know, we still have pajama parties at the weekends where we all sleep together. You know, but you can have that flexibility. And I know that the days that I can't put her to sleep, she's also okay.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I've had to have times when she wasn't okay. And I've had to be willing to go through that.
Yes. And that taking responsibility piece, like I lay down and fall asleep with my children because I like it.
Mm-hmm.
If it becomes part of their routine, if they like it, if they do not, mm-hmm. I also know that they don't depend upon it. It is something that I've done because I have created that. It's because they depend on it.
That's right.
They don't go to sleep at a certain time because they need it. It's what we've done. Things have.
Yes.
Things, what is it that Chris says? The reason things have got this way.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then to notice when it's no longer working, right?
Yes.
I was talking to a parent a couple of days ago that, you know, has a very difficult sleep routine and they are just about to have a baby. And they love their current routine, but the parent is super anxious about the baby coming along and not being able to do that routine. Now, that's really important information.
Yeah.
We need to see that, look at that, and change it.
And or recognize that this sleep routine is important to me as a mom or as a dad.
That's right.
Therefore, I will do certain things to maintain it because it's important
That's
to me.
That's right.
And I hear a lot of parents transferring that to my
child
rather than.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
I need it.
Mm-mm-mm.
That's okay. Mm-hmm. I need it. Sometimes it's the only time you get your child to talk to you.
That's true. Totally true. Like I've had this conversation with my husband because he's not the one lying next to the kids, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. I love it. And he goes, you know, she doesn't need it. I'm like, I know, I do. And he's like, fine, then I'll just leave you to it. And he goes. And, you know, sometimes he'll go, why are you going in? Like, to go and snuggle up to Mia. He's like, she's fine. I'm like, I know. That's not the point.
It's not to fix anything.
No, it's not to fix anything. It's just that, you know, I haven't seen her much or whatever it might be.
Yep.
But yeah, absolutely. Making sure you know who it's for. And in the same light, there's a very old book called Liberating Children, Liberating Parents, I think. It's by, oh goodness, I need Chris. The same authors of How to Talk to Children So They Will Listen and How to Listen So They Will Talk. Mm-hmm. Can't remember their names at the moment. Adele. Anyway, I don't think it was ever reprinted, this book, which is a shame. It's got a great couple of chapters on anger in parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the title is called Liberated Parents, in that it talks about liberating us to feel, give ourselves permission to not like things, give ourselves permission to want to do things and not others.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about being honest about what you like doing with your kids and what you don't, for example, which I think is a real problem in our current sort of parenting expectations, that we should love playing with kids. We should love being with them all the time. it's particularly difficult. It's interesting here in Singapore, a lot of people have home help, have live-in. And what that does is it increases the expectations around spending time with the kids because they're not cleaning and cooking and shopping.
Right. Right.
So suddenly.
What if I don't want to? I don't want to. I want to take a dance class.
That's not allowed. Yeah, that's not allowed because you're supposed to be the super parent and, you know, super present and love it.
And well, I mean, there you go. Right.
Yeah. We have to love it. And that's the hard part. Like, what if you don't love it? Like I had a parent say to me, a single parent say to me, I really resent my kids at the moment. They're so depleting.
Yes.
And
I had a similar conversation recently with a client.
Yeah. And that's just fact.
Yeah.
And now what are you going to do? Yeah, the question is, what are we going to do with that fact?
What are we going to do with it? Yep.
Yeah. As opposed to how do I get rid of it so that I spend as much time and not resent them? Well, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
You know, would you prefer to be somebody who doesn't resent their kids and loves spending all the time with them? Yeah, but that's not what we're looking at now. We're looking at you being absolutely depleted because you work incredible hours, you have an unsupportive ex-husband, and you have neurodiverse children.
Right. Depleting.
Depleting. Yeah. And it's such okay. A validating word.
And find time, you know, refilling our cup or, you know, restoring our own energy, putting our mask on first so we can then help others who need our help. All of those metaphors. And you know, there was something that you said before we began the recording about the importance of boundaries as a parent of a neurodivergent child or children, and how those boundaries, especially when consistent, can be very, very regulating. Could you speak a little bit to that? And I know we are starting to run out of time, so I'm sorry to leave you with such a big question at the end of our time.
Yeah, it's so important. So there's something about boundaries that can be very regulating because life becomes really predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Like if this happens, then that will happen. And it's soothing for everybody to have really clear black and white. It's like structure. I often think of structure as a form of self-care for the neurodivergent population.
Yeah. Even when it's like hard to create.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I work with adults and it becomes really apparent that they need that consistency. And that just calms them because they don't have to think through what's going to happen.
Mm.
They just know this will happen. And it's the same with boundary setting. You know, they know that this is what's expected of me and I need to do what's expected of me. And it's reassuring. Now, initially, boundary setting with the neurodivergent community can be very difficult because if it's a change in a transition into something that's new, it may require a lot of persistence.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, it's easier for everybody. Like you don't have to think on your feet as much.
And people can be calmer.
Yeah.
Which brings the effort down moment to moment to begin with when everyone is able to regulate.
That's right. The other sort of Jedi skill, I think, for parents is how to learn to do firm but kind boundaries. I think what tends to happen, and they talk about this in one of these parenting models called the circle of security, but this is a swing, right? Seesaw, sorry. And this sort of for the neurodivergent is particularly difficult, is that when we tend to go from being kind and weak,
mm-hmm.
and then the seesaw flips when we get fed up and exhausted, and we go firm but mean.
Yes.
And then we feel awful about that firm and mean,
which gets
us back up. Yeah. And then we just swing from one to the other. And with the neurodivergent, it's overwhelming. So it just keeps us flicking. And what we really need to find is the kind but firm, you know, that kindness and firmness can go very nicely together. And that's what most of us struggle with. There's a sense that if you're firm, you're mean.
And that idea of before we sort of lose our patience.
Yeah.
Can we set the boundary before we lose our patience? Can we notice that the fuse has been lit and be able to be kind and firm because we're not right at the edge of our patience or our tolerance?
And be willing to take a break if you need it. Like I've said so many times to my children, okay, I'm going to leave now because I'm going to say something I regret.
I used to set myself in time out.
Yeah.
I would just walk out. I need time away and I would go.
Yeah, exactly. I do that. Not as much anymore, but I used to have to do that a lot when the boys were younger because I knew I was not going to do it effectively. I was going to be the mean firm.
Yeah. And if we pay attention, we notice it's coming. We feel it coming. And if we pay attention long enough and work on our noticing skills, we can start to get those little cues. Oh, here I go.
Yeah. And be curious what the cue is. Like it will be, we all have certain cues. And often I have mine is around disrespect or actually ungrateful.
Mm.
I think a lot of parents have that. And sometimes I need to regulate how attached I get to those words. Like I have to manage myself, like he's being ungrateful and that's terrible. And in the future, he's going to be this ungrateful kid. And I sort of get this catastrophizing. You know, of what's going to, and so I have to downregulate because I might become mean, but it's actually not that effective.
Right.
In that moment. Like I have to be firm with me, not with him. I need to rein in myself, you know, going off on a, oh my goodness, how can you be ungrateful? How dare you? Like, you know, maybe they say they didn't like the present. Oh, this was awful. So ungrateful. It's actually not a huge deal what's just happened. They cannot like a present. It's okay.
No.
They cannot say sorry to their sibling, even though I want them to say sorry. They're in a huff. They're not ready to say sorry. That's okay. I don't need to escalate.
Sorry.
Yeah, they often don't. Sorry. I usually, what I do with the sorry is I step in for them.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not going to say sorry and they're... instead of getting an argument, you better say sorry. I go, you know, so-and-so hasn't got their sorry ready yet. It's not ready to say sorry, hasn't got their sorry voice. I'm going to say sorry. I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have taken your toy or smacked you or whatever happened right there. I sort of, so that the sorry happens and I feel better about that piece. But I'm not having a battle trying to get a sorry out of somebody who's just not ready, willing, doesn't agree.
Doesn't feel sorry.
Doesn't feel sorry, absolutely. And it's sort of feeling really indignant. Indignant's a great word. There's a lot of indignation at the moment in my family. A lot with my two boys.
Yes. The reason, what did you say earlier? The reason it's hard is because it's hard. The reason it feels hard.
Yes. Hard. Oh my goodness. Yes, completely. That's right. Like, and sometimes I think about that and I think if it's too hard, maybe it's too hard.
Mm.
Maybe there's something we need to change. Like, for example, you know, that day that I was like, I haven't got it in me. That would have been a too hard day.
Yes. Yes. And so you were able to pivot.
Mm-hmm.
To take care of yourself so that you could continue to take care of them.
That's right. With a smile.
Mm-hmm.
And not a growl.
Firm but kind.
And it will depend, right? We've all got different tolerances and it depends on the day and in the minute and the moment. That's why it's so complicated because there's so many variables.
And we should pause right on that. That's a wonderful place for us to leave everyone sort of hanging with the ambiguity of how hard this is and how much we want to be perfect and we can't. Yes. And we are human and our children are human and we don't have the control that we would love.
No, that's right. And what a blessing that is. One of my old mentors said, I pity the children with perfect parents. And that stayed with me.
I pity the parents with perfect children.
Also,
there's something not.
That's right.
Something that's not really authentic about that too.
That's right. It is worrying.
Yeah.
There you go. Perfect isn't perfect.
Not the goal.
No.
Emma,
oh, what a relief.
Yeah,
yes, that was lovely.
So
what fun. That flew by.
It really,
I hope it was
really
useful.
Did. I'll make sure to get all of your information up on the website. And until we speak again, thank you so
yes.
much.
Yeah. Thank you. That was super fun.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us. Please consider checking out the website www.vigiobx.com to find more helpful resources from our guests and from other professionals using acceptance and commitment training to support parents and children. You can leave comments or requests on the podcast page, find more information about our guests, and subscribe to our newsletter as well. We have a recommended book list, a blog, and options for a free 30-minute consultation if you're interested in working with us. Go gently and have a great day.